Thank you. I take this opportunity to maybe give a few reflections. The way that a Buddhist monk teaches is we're not giving forth doctrines, beliefs, opinions, or views, not to tell you what you should do or what you should become, but merely reflecting on truth or the way things are. So anything I say is a reflection from the mind. And hopefully this will offer you that kind of encouragement to start reflecting on your own life and on the world that we live in. Because whether we like it or not, we are alive in this world as it happens to be right now, in all its virtues, vices, beauties, and faults. The world is this way. Our minds are now conditioned very much to always be thinking of how the world should be. And so we become overwhelmed by the endless problems that we create on the personal plane, social, economic, political, international, you name it. We manage to weave into our daily lives endless complexities that we create onto the world as it is. And this is why the world is the way it is. Ignorant human beings producing endless complexities onto it. Now, when I decided to become a Buddhist monk, I had no intention, actually, of becoming president of the Buddhist Society or abbot of a monastery. In fact, I was totally selfish. I had thought that I was absolutely of no use to anyone, and that my presence removed from the society would be a great benefit to it, and that the only possible way that I might be able to bear another year of life was by becoming a Buddhist monk in that very hospitable country of Thailand. I found a very wise and compassionate Thai Buddhist teacher in the very remote part of northeast Thailand. And of course, this was at the time of the Vietnam War. And I remember one of the first nights that I was ordained, and I went off into this little hut in the forest. And I went into the darkest corner of the hut, and I sat down. There was no light whatsoever. I put my hand in front of my eyes. I couldn't even see my own hand. And I felt this tremendous relief. I don't exist anymore. I'm completely annihilated, vanished into the dark, because life had seemed to be an endless confusion in the way that I had been living it, and the attitudes and that came from just not understanding the life of a human being and the world that we have to live in. One either tended to blame oneself, like I was doing, thinking there was something wrong, something a bit amiss in myself, or blaming my parents was the fashion of my generation. Our mothers always were the objects of this terrible criticism. But my mother, she's actually a very nice mother. I had a terrible time trying to blame her. Then I blamed the United States, being an American. I thought, it's that blasted USA. But no matter what it was, this was a projection from my mind. And as long as I kept believing in all these inferior kind of creations I was making, coming out of fear, out of anger, out of greed, when I just followed that, then I tended to create all around me misery, not only for myself, but everyone that I happened to live with. So that the only answer to that was to become a hermetic Buddhist monk in the most remote part, you know, off in the northeast of Thailand, incognito. No one will ever find you, and you'll be able to live your life. I saw myself as one of these old kind of Thailand. They have these old, feeble monks in their 90s. Their teeth, or if they have any teeth, they're black from chewing this betel nut. They're very nice, very peaceful. Now, that's all I ask, just to live my life in a peaceful way. But then, strangely enough, things happen that you have really no control over, or very little, and you find yourself 20 years later, president of a Buddhist society, abbot of a monastery, giving public talks, lectures, making tapes, videos, and it amazes me sometimes to think that, how did I get into this? Then there's always this question that was echoed in this meeting today of the responsibility of an individual in regards to one's life or to the society, to the world that we live in. Well, one side thinks Buddhist monks just go off and live in forests, contemplate their navels, watch their breath, and don't care about what's happening in the world. They're no longer useful, down with Buddhist monks. And then there's the activist side, that we want to make Buddhism an active social movement to try to set the world right, is, say, the opposite extreme. But it isn't necessary to regard these as canceling out each other, is it? And if you think about it, then the nature of thought itself goes on a linear streak, where you end up with always some foolish idea in your mind that you can't do this or you can't do that, or you should or you shouldn't. Because thought itself is something that, if it's not coming from the right place, it's not coming from wisdom, then it only takes us to distorted views, to righteousness, to condemning, to hatred, to all the things that create nuclear weapons and wars. And of course, people talk about religion, and many people say religion is always the cause of war. Look at what's happened in Ireland. Look at the Middle East. And now in Sri Lanka, look what's happening there. Those Buddhists and those Tamils having it out, it's disgusting. And Buddhism has failed us, because we were expecting Buddhism to never have its name dirtied or smudged or bloodied with war. But just the laws of nature make us always eat our words. So Buddhists now can't smugly say, there's never been a war by a Buddhist. Even though this can be debated, now war is always the result of human ignorance. It's never from wisdom. There's never been war has never been anything that has come from the wisdom of the human mind. It's always from the ignorance of the human mind. And so it is important to understand the human mind, which is your mind, isn't it? Just to understand the human mind as if it were something in a book or in another human being is missing the whole point, when it's the actual mind that we have to live with for this lifetime. So our mind is a very important thing to understand. And this is what happens to you when you begin to look at yourself. And rather than be caught up by blaming oneself, blaming the world, analyzing, criticizing, and using this function of mind, the way of meditation is always through using the reflective ability of the human mind, because this is what really is our greatest gift as human beings. Why, in Buddhist terms, we can be enlightened beings, because of this ability to reflect on our own existence. Now, one thing we have to admit is that we do exist. We're conscious beings with a body. And this body was obviously born, even though I can't remember the day I was born. My mother told me I was. And she doesn't lie. And this seems a natural assumption to make, that I was actually born, because there is this separate form standing here in front of you, and there's consciousness. And so this consciousness is something that we can reflect on. The fact that being born means that we are now incarcerated, encapsulated within a separate form, like this body. No matter if we like it or not, it's not the point. The reflection is that this is what birth is about. It's coming out as a separate entity seemingly so, and that we have senses that are always being impinged on in some way or another, either pleasantly or neutral or unpleasantly. And we have to bear with this for our lifespan. This is what a human life is. It's the being born in a sensual and sensitive and very vulnerable condition that we have to bear with for as long as this condition lasts, its lifetime. So this is what I'm doing. I'm reflecting for you the common ground we all share, that we all have this same problem of having been born, we are now exposed as a very sensitive, separate entity in a vast, mysterious universe. Because the world around us and the universe we live in has to remain a mystery for us. We can't really know very much about it. It is as it is the most we can honestly say about it when we look at ourselves in contrast to the vast expanse and the perception of the universe. All we can say honestly is that it is this way. Now, if we just concern ourselves with our own human condition, then of course we try to make utopian societies, making laws and trying to make everything perfect on the planet. So there's this energy very much active now in trying to say uplift the human condition to where we rise up to a nobler state of, say, compassion, feeling generosity, being morally responsible for our lives as we're living them within this form on the planet. But this isn't enough either, is it? Just the be-all and end-all is to live our lives trying to make the planet a nice place to live in, where everything's fair and just and there's no war and everybody's happy, because this is not the way life is. The planet is only a small thing, and planetary life is only a brief experience. It's a transition. And so that when we forget this, then we become what is often called materialists, just or idealists, where we spend all our energy, all our effort in trying to be safe, comfortable, happy, privileged, have the pleasures, try to get rid of sickness, and try to surround ourselves with all that we think will make us happy and feel safe and comfortable. But in a country like this one, which has been fairly successful at creating utopian environments, whether you want to admit it or not, this is a very nice country to live in, and it offers all kinds of securities and guarantees and opportunities. And still, even at the best that this country can offer us, the very best that it can give us, it's not enough. There's something more to it. That even if we could make Britain into the best country in the whole world and make it a morally responsible, just and merciful, wise country, it wouldn't be enough for us. Because there's something that we have to do ourselves that we can't expect from the government, from the society, from another person, from a husband, wife, from a messiah, an avatar, Maitreya Buddha, or anyone else. That inevitably we have to come to terms with our own existence. Now, I'm not saying that we should put off social concerns and moral problems in the society at all, because this is very much a part of our life, is to learn how to live in a responsible way, how to learn within the limits that we find ourselves, how to accept the limits of our human condition and the world that we live in, how to know those limits so that we are not insensitive, demanding, and causing endless conflicts through blame and righteousness and hatred. But then we can start contemplating this mystery. That one thing that we can do is that once we kind of come to terms with ourselves in a decent way, we try to live in a way that is harmless, for one thing. Harmlessness is one of the most important human virtues, to try to make yourself into one who is not intentionally harming others. And this is one of the most important realizations and suggestions of the age, that with all the talk of nuclear weapons and wars and reduction of arms, there's not much real concern on the international level of what is truly moral. What is our moral responsibility as a human being? And of course, a moral responsibility means that we have to intend in our lives to try to live in a way that is not through insensitivity or deliberate intention causing harm, misery, unhappiness to other beings. So that this, in Buddhist terms, you can't even call yourself a proper human being, a full human being, until you resolve in your life to refrain from any kind of intentional cruelty or murder, killing, violence of any sort. That this is one of the things that in Buddhist terms, allows us to call ourselves a human being, which means a human being is one who is capable of reflecting and wisely living within the structures and limits that we find ourselves. And that is when we start examining and contemplating our own humanity, then it becomes obvious that the only peaceful and right way that one can live is by living peacefully with kindness, with compassion, with love for ourselves, with this being here, and all other beings. Now this is a realization that isn't just a religious idea. That the more you come to terms with yourself, the more you really look honestly and earnestly at yourself, you will begin to find that this is a very important thing in one's life. That we take every effort we can to try to live in a responsible way. How we relate to other beings, then, is not through blaming or hatred or anger, greed, delusion, but through compassion, through kindness, through joyfulness, through love. And this can only happen when we let go of selfish interest, selfish demand, and all the fears, all the desires that we tend to be blinded by and obsessed with. So then this is what meditation is about in the Buddhist terms of meditation, is the willingness to look honestly at one's own existence and to see clearly how to let it go, how to allow things to move and change, how to let go of all forms of greed, hatred, and delusion. And when we realize this way of letting go of selfish interest, selfish demand, and delusion, then we begin to realize what true peacefulness is. Because the true nature of mind is peaceful. It's peaceful right now. Whether you realize it or not, your mind, your real mind is peaceful. Maybe what you're thinking is not peaceful. What you're feeling is not peaceful. What you believe in. Or you can believe in peace and still be not peaceful. Now, what is peace? What do we mean by that? In ultimate terms, I mean, we'd like to have peace on earth. So that means not have these terrible weapons and not have international conflicts and to live in a kind and respectful way with each other. But that's still not real peace. Because real peace can only come from an empty mind. And an empty mind is where we penetrate beyond just the illusions of our thoughts and feelings and sensory consciousness to the true nature of mind, where there is wholeness and where the sense of being a separate entity and identity with all that separates and discriminates is seen through. It still operates, But it's no longer deludiness. We see things in the right way. In other words, then our actions, then what we do for the society, how we live our life, is right. What we say, how we make our living, our actions in the society that we're living in, then that will be the right thing to do. And that comes from wisdom, from right seeing, from understanding things properly. Now this you can only do yourself, because even though we'd like to maybe have some sage come along, tell us all the answers, because it's easier, isn't it, to have someone else tell us what's right and what's wrong and what we should do. But that is not the way. We can no longer expect or demand that from anyone. That we are now at a point in the human evolution where we must fully, each one of us, take on this responsibility ourselves. And this is looking directly at our own existence. When we find the true nature of mind is peaceful, then this sense of separation and loneliness and fear and anguish that we feel through attachment to conditions of mind and through ignorance, then this falls away, this fades away. And then how can one relate in with a mind that is clear, devoid of selfishness, is through kindness, compassion, joyousness, serenity. Now this, as far as I know, is about as far as a human being can go. Because if you can do this, then you have perfected your human condition. You've seen through it. You've let go of the attachments, the ignorance, the biases, the prejudices, all these that come from our culture, our class, race, nationality. All these things are conditioned into the mind. When you believe that the body, your body is yours, then you're always going to suffer from whatever happens to it. And inevitably it gets old, doesn't it? They don't get younger, and they tend to, no matter how medicine tries to rid us of terrible diseases, terrible diseases seem to increase these days. I thought 25 years ago they'd get rid of them all by now, but they haven't. If we attach to race, nationality, to sex, to class, then this always breeds conflict. If we attach to religion, it breeds conflict. Attachment to Buddhism will breed conflict, because then there are Buddhists and non-Buddhists. And if we're attached to being a Buddhist, then we're going to be threatened by non-Buddhists. So even as a Buddhist monk, right, one cannot be attached if you know the nature of mind. There can be a Buddhist monk, but non-attachment. One can be a Christian without becoming a Christian. One can be a Jew without becoming a Jew. In other words, these are not no longer divisive conventions that separate and divide, but the skillful means we use towards understanding and looking into the nature of existence to free ourselves from all the illusions we have about it. Now, one thing we also must come to terms with is our own death. The death is the end of this body here. And so death itself is something we must open to, contemplate. And then after we die, we don't know, do we? All of us are still alive, so we don't know what happens then. But as we live our life now in honesty and in earnestness, by being moral, by being generous, kindly, compassionate, as we free ourselves from delusions, then we feel very drawn to the total mystery. And this is the mystical religious experience that they talk about, is that total openness in this very vulnerable, sensitive form to a vast mystery, which terrifies us if we're still caught up in selfish views and opinions. And so much of the problems that we see, individual problems, social problems, political, international problems, come from this fear of not understanding the mystery. Let's just avoid it. Let's talk about war. It's exciting, isn't it? When you hear Falklands War and this war, and it's terribly exciting. You don't have to think. You think about maybe somebody else dying. Hopefully you'll get out of it. War is exciting. It excites the mind. The mystery can be terrifying because then it means the death of personal self-interest in remaining, of having rights, privileges, protection for yourself, and all the foolishness that go along with ignorance. Now, the religious message has always been one of the spiritually evolved human being that has opened to the mystery. The mystery's never solved. We can't solve the mystery. And that's conceit, isn't it, to think that this wretched little creature here is going to solve the mystery of the vast universe. So what do we do with it? Well, all I can do, and all I find I'm able to do, is to open to it. Open myself and offer myself to the mystery. And when we do this, then we find all kinds of opportunities, occasions for love and compassion, for social action in the right way, in living in the society in a way that is a great blessing for it. Ask yourselves, how can you live in this country in a way that blesses it, rather than thinking of all your rights and privileges and what you can get from it? This is one of the most distressing problems I see in the affluent Western world, is that it makes us very selfish and demanding. When I came to Britain 10 years ago, I was invited by a Buddhist group to come and live in Britain. And then I asked myself, how could I live as a Buddhist monk in this country in a way that would be a benefit to the country? Because this is, if I'm going to come and live here, then I must live in a way that is not burdening this country, is not causing more conflict, more division within it. And I thought, can you do this as a Buddhist monk? Can you live in a Western country like Britain without being a source of conflict or division? And I thought, well, the only way you can find out is by doing it. See what you can do with it. So I accepted the invitation. And 10 years later, we find that many people have taken an interest that it is very possible to live as a Buddhist monk in this country, and that one's intentions are to try to be that which is blessing, helpful, and benevolent within this society. So that's our intention as Buddhist monks. Sometimes we aren't always successful. Sometimes just my appearance frightens little children. But my intention is not to. I don't go around kind of crossing my eyes and sticking out my tongue at them. Some people get offended because they think I'm a missionary. So they think, why did we have our God? We don't want you here. But that's not my intention, to convert. The intention, then, that I regard as that I can use to live in this country is to live in a way that will be a blessing to it. And that I can only see as by letting go of selfish interests. By continuously, every day, it's not easy. It's not something you let go of once and it's gone forever. It means you have to be continuously aware and alert, not to be acting out of selfish interest, out of delusion and ignorance. So that my appreciation for all the things that I've experienced within this country, and the respect, the help from many directions, many unexpected directions, my respect for the speakers today, for all their interest and concern and sincerity and the efforts they put forth in trying to help not only this society here in Britain, but the planet itself, how to live as a human being so that our presence within this form is in harmony and is blessing the planet. Because this is another important reflection, that when there is no self, when there is no selfish interest, then the divine can manifest through these funny little forms. It does. That's the only way the divine can really manifest in action and in speech, is through a selfless human being's mind. So I will end my formal talk at this point and leave the rest of the time open for questions.
Beautiful thought. Can we perhaps try to keep our discussion and our questions at that sort of level? Who's going to be the first one? Somebody way over at the back.
I think you all have that. We live in the new age, and there's nothing we can do about that. But can we just ignore it, or must we do something positive to counteract it?
This is rather difficult to understand, I admit. But the nuclear age is a perception of the mind. And as long as we believe in the nuclear age out of ignorance, then we're going to get a terrible result. But if we understand that the nuclear age is an age that we can make offerings to, then, of course, that would help in many ways, whatever situation you find yourself. If you're just one of those ignorant housewives, or you're a campaigner, or a Buddhist monk, there's no one that it can't make an offering to the peace of this age. Now, the nuclear age always has this ring of disaster. When I think of the nuclear age, it brings forth in my mind a sense of dread. I don't know what it does to yours. So I'd like to call it another age, some other kind of age possibly, age of compassion or whatever. Because if we believe, this is very important, if we believe all these gloom, doom predictions, and the menace and the powers of these unscrupulous countries and multinationals and all this, if we believe in it, if we believe that that's actually truth, and that then we keep giving it power to be the way it is. And so this is why we must really look at the nature of mind so that we do not encourage this kind of ignorance anymore. And of course, that you can do with yourself. I can't make you do it, but I can at least do it myself.
I think it would be interesting if the speaker could tell us, if he said it briefly, from that moment, when he says he was first ordained and he thought he dropped out of society, to his position today, it sees something of the transition. And how we equate this with personal responsibility for himself?
It became apparent, I ordained to drop out, actually, as I said, and then through the years, it didn't take very long, before I began to, I had the time and the opportunity just in the place I was living in, to start relaxing and being able to look at myself. Before, my life had been merely an attempt to seek pleasure or do things or operate from maybe idealism or from fear. But at least those first few years were years where I felt a sense of ease. I was living with very kind people, with a very wise teacher, and I felt I could just trust in the social situation I was in. And from that I began to contemplate, why did I feel so much anxiety outside the monastery? Why did I began to sense that all my life there's been a sense of fear and anxiety driving me, even in fairly safe situations. I was never fought in a war or lived dangerously, but there was always this kind of haunting anxiety in my life that was driving me onward. And I could come to terms with that. I began to accept that and look at it rather than just follow it or react to it. And then in 1975, I remember the Americans left Vietnam, and we lived right on the borders of Laos and Cambodia, and those two countries were taken over by the communists. And I was thinking then, I thought, everybody then thought Thailand would go next. They had this domino idea that once Laos and Cambodia went, then Thailand would be the next one. And of course, Thailand reacted with great panic, and everybody was very concerned, and of course, this affected me. So then I began to think about how to go back to the West as a Buddhist monk, because by this time, we were in a monastery where there were about 20 Western bhikkhus living there. I thought, what are these poor bhikkhus going to do? Bhikkhus are Buddhist monks when Thailand goes communist. And so then from this, our teacher, the teacher I was with, was gradually kind of helping me to think in a grander way, where encouraging me in ways of relating to the society. I was encouraged to not just sit and quietly all the time, but to take a responsible role in the Thai society I found myself. I had to give talks. I had to be a proper Buddhist monk in the Thai context, and this was very much a part of the training. So then the coming to Britain 10 years ago, things just, and one trust, this is where this word faith or trust is important, because by that time I'd had enough experience in meditation to trust in just being very, very mindful and just trusting in what happened and in the way things went, that would be the right way, what I would be able to do, how, the people I would meet, the things that would come to me, this I should trust and work with in this right way. And so that now when I think of going back to living in a dark cave in Thailand, it's not an unattractive thought, actually. I like that. I like hermetic life because it's so peaceful. But also one sees that this is not the way for me, that I must trust in what I'm doing now and carry onward in this way. Well, this is when we're discussing peace, it's so vast that It's not like it's in your head or anything. And we're talking, and when I'm using this word mind, I don't mean it. It's like it's up in your brain, or you have to create it and believe in a concept. And then the more you kind of hold on to that, then you'll find peace. But actually, it's like that which unifies, which is whole and complete. And if we break through the illusions of separateness that our sensory form gives us, when we break through that illusion, and that takes investigation of our existence, when we break through that, then we realize the oneness of all things. There's no sense of being separate and alien from anything anymore. And even though there's still the sensory experiences operating in their natural way, one has broken through the ignorance that one had about them before, and this is why when we talk about peace, the word itself, what do you really mean? What can really be peaceful? Now the mind, most out of ignorance, there's always a conflict in the human mind, because just the nature of sensory experience, you're constantly being impinged on and affected by the sensory world. And if you don't understand that, then you're taking it personally, you're trying to get the good and reject the bad, and you're endlessly caught in reacting to sensory stimulation. And this is why people have nervous breakdowns and depression, and right now in a fast and frantic society that we find ourselves, people are breaking down all the time from just being caught up in this endless irritation to their minds from the sensory world, and they take it very personally, and the society enforces it as a personal thing. It makes you think that you had a nervous breakdown and that there's something wrong with you, or there's something missing, or something inferior, kind of permanently damaged or permanently wrong, or maybe from birth you didn't get it all right. And this is all from a person taking everything on the personal plane. When you break through that illusion, then one can accept the sensory impingement coming through to the mind in a way that you find true peace, even in the midst of a battlefield. One can be at peace even in the worst, most confused sensory situation. But that, of course, is not where you should start looking for peace.
this last question, I'm afraid.
Well, at this stage of human civilization, when the threat of nuclear war seems quite serious in certain ways, that there seems to be the general fear and apprehension about, you know, somebody could accidentally crash the button. I was wondering whether you would send Mikhail Gorbachev, Ronald Reagan, and Margaret Thatcher to a Buddhist meditation retreat. Then I think we might solve all the problems and fears that we have. Would you agree with me?
I think that's a very good idea. And it's true, if they could just shut up for a few days, I think they might realize something.
Well, the only thing is there are other people who put up their hands as well. So I think I'm going to have to echo the last remark and say, if only we will shut up. Sorry to put it so harshly. We now go on to our next and final part of the day, which is a slide presentation with accompanying music featuring the work of Nicholas Roerich.